check this out. This is Fresh Fit Out the China Man with the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the Blunt Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck D, Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Man.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfuckers.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Dizzy Paul.
Vice One.
Yo, this is DJ Reddy Brand.
What up, what up, what up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records, reveal the addition of rappers that are coming up, get them put on. We need to the platform to fight the mainstream. The show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow with Wizards.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics and shadow design. Check out the archives and hundreds of shows. But the economy is muted, did through everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real review.
Unstoppable, we represent. All them killers on the mic, and we show love to all you fans.
I'm a man-made guy, crazy knocking all you rappers off. It's underground society, it's beauty, it's a life, dog. Hip-hop AD, representing for the legends. Rapping mumble rappers, so me, sitting on the hip. Two pocket beats, dreaming, thank you for the bliss. It's a murder, massive music show. Free the homie gangsta bro. I see these rappers on these streets, I got my chop about to blow. Stay up on that raw shit, uncut street shit.
Keep it
up
forever, bitch, we're coming in a song. I see you feeding for the show.
What's up, everybody? It's your boy Prez. Welcome to episode 604 of the Murder Master Music Show. Normally we do hip hop, but you know us, we always think outside the box. And today we're actually, this is part two of American Hemp. The first part we did was with the lovely Jen Hobbs. She wrote a wonderful book. And our guest today wrote the foreword by it. You might know him as a former governor, wrestler, TV show host, actor, activist. I mean, all of that and then some. But also you should know him as number one author, Jesse Ventura. Let me bring him on right now. How are you doing, Jesse?
Hi, Scott. How are you? Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I'm doing real good. I really love the book. Of course, a couple years ago you wrote the Marijuana Manifesto with Jen Hobbs. What made you want to go ahead and do that book, and how did that develop into the book we have now, American Hemp?
Well, because to be quite honest, and I try to keep my private life as private as I can generally, but in this case I've gone public over the fact that cannabis gave me my life back. And when I say that with the deadening pause in there, it wasn't me, but someone extremely close to me developed a seizure disorder. And the person was put on four different kinds of pharmaceutical medicine from the pharmacy and the doctors. None of it worked. All of it had bad side effects. And out of desperation at the time, we drove to Colorado, and where they did have medical, at the time, quote, medical marijuana. And the person started with the three drops under the tongue, and that was about 4 years ago and has not had a seizure since. Today we can get it in Minnesota, but it's extremely expensive because it's so limited here. That's why I'm an advocate for full legalization, because that drives the prices down. I have to pay over $600 a month, and you can't write it off. Your insurance won't pay for it, for something that works, when they'll pay for everything that don't work. You know, all the pharmaceutical crap, they're happy to pay for that, that don't work. And so that, if you've ever dealt with anyone with seizures, you'll know that you're helpless. All you can do is comfort the person, hope for the best, and ensure they don't hurt themselves while the seizure is taking place. And it really had taken my entire life away from me. And cannabis has now given it back to me completely. And so that's why I've made it one of my life's mission, is to see cannabis legalized across America so people don't have to suffer. And like my good friend Tommy Chong says, and who knows more about it than him, he's the expert. You want to know something? Talk to Tommy Chong. Well, like Tommy said, there should be no difference between what they call medical and recreational cannabis or pot.
Yeah.
Because the people that smoke it for their brain, for the euphoric feeling, they're doing it for mental health.
Yeah.
So the entire plant is a health plant, whether it's curing cancer, whether it's stopping seizures, the list goes on and on and on and on the amazing thing this plant can do. By the way, I was the keynote speaker a year ago at the Jacob Javits Center at the full convention of the American cannabis industry. It's a $40 billion industry waiting to happen. Made in America, jobs in America, used in America. How can we get any more America than that? And when you consider, here's the fun argument, when you consider that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights are made of it, as is Betsy Ross's flag, how can they possibly say that this plant isn't American?
It's ridiculous, Jesse. I love how you point out, too, how they lump in hemp with marijuana. And,
the point is they should treat them both and legalize them all.
Yeah, they should.
Legalize all of them.
It's not a drug per se as like they would say Schedule One.
I spoke at the Javits Center, I told people, yeah. I said, look, if you use too much cannabis and you overdose from it and die, I said, take heart. You're going into the history books. You're the first one.
Yeah.
I said, you'll go down in history. If you die, but you can't overdose cannabis.
Killed. One person got killed for marijuana, and that was because a pallet fell on him.
Or he ate himself to death.
Yeah, exactly. You point out the details, Jesse, of the struggle that this has been. They just passed the Farms Act last year, 2018. But as we know from the past, when is the government actually going to allow farmers to do what they need to do?
I believe the genie's out of the bottle, and we need to tip our hats to the state of Colorado for that. Because Colorado was the first to legalize, quote, recreational, and nothing has happened. The sky hasn't fallen. In fact, it's been so positive, unbelievable out there. And so that the genie's out of the bottle now. California, Oregon, Washington, the states are lining up. The East Coast has to get on board. They're late, as is the Midwest. I believe Michigan just legalized. I think Massachusetts has, and a couple, maybe one or two other states up there. And then it's a case of, here's the big sticker, is in the federal system right now, in the tax code, there is a thing specifically for cannabis in there, no other industry. And because of this, they can't show profit and expand. And what this is, cannabis growers are not allowed to write off their expenses.
That is just crazy.
It's the only business in America that can't do that. It's un-American. And if the cannabis, see, everyone thinks the cannabis growers are making money, this big money. They're not. The government is. The government's raking it all in, taking it from them because of this thing in the tax code. They can't write anything off. So the big corporations in the cannabis industry are only showing about 1% to 2% profit. That's barely breathing water or breathing air. It's having your nose out of the water. And see, if they were allowed to write off expenses, they'd be like a normal company. Then they'd go up to a 20 to 25% profit range. Then they could expand. Then they could grow the business and do all the things that are the American way of creating jobs. These are all jobs. You know, it's hilarious now. Here's a funny thing. We used to always, I've lived in Mexico in the winter now for about 14 years, 15 years. And years ago, it was people having to sneak Mexican cannabis into the United States. Today, it's reversed. Because the best cannabis grown in the world now is grown in Colorado and California and all these states that have legalized. You're seeing the cannabis flow is now going the other way. People are taking the cannabis down to Mexico because it's better from the U.S.
it's great to see that. I remember a few years back, Sanjay Gupta did that documentary on CNN,
yep.
And he said it changed his views by seeing how it helped people. And I remember seeing, you might remember this, Jesse, you're talking about seizures. There is a little boy with seizures. There's a video of him on the internet. And the father rubbed just a little bit on his foot. And it calmed his seizures down dramatically to the point where he wasn't even having them. That right there
should be
enough to sign anything into law across the board.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, here's the problem. You want to know what the big major problem is? Is that technically poor people could get it for free. Because if you wanted to grow it and take the time to do it, if it were legalized in your backyard, you could do it. I remember when I was a kid growing up in South Minneapolis in the city. Every year my mom had a big tomato patch in the backyard where we would eat fresh tomatoes all summer long from what she grew in the backyard. Well, cannabis grows just as easy. And poor people could grow it in their backyards and be able to use it accordingly. Well, guess what that means? That means the government ain't getting no money, right?
Yeah, they're wanting.
So one of your big rubs. The big rub is that people could grow it on their own, use it on their own, and the government wouldn't be getting a cut of the pie. And so the government don't like that because I'll tell you this: I've been in government. If government could tax you for the air that you breathe, they would do it.
They would, yeah.
They would. And so that's another big rub of why, we don't want to legalize this stuff. Plus, it's also competition. It was originally outlawed because William Randolph Hearst, the big paper guy from Frisco, he owned thousands of acres of timberland. He didn't want the competition because hemp makes better paper. It's a renewable. It'll grow 18 feet in the summer where a tree grows 1 foot. And he didn't want that competition, so he used his power and money in Washington, got it all declared illegal, and therefore we then had to buy his trees to make paper. Now, how much better for the atmosphere and the global weather conditions today than to be using a renewable like hemp? That can grow 18 feet in a summer and grow it again the next summer. It's insanity.
And if
people need to wake up and start realizing, and for all the religious people out there who believe that God created the earth, well, that means God created cannabis too, didn't he?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. How are we going to argue that? Yeah.
Well, if it stands to logic, if they believe God, if people that believe in God believe God created everything on this planet, that means he created cannabis, and I don't think it was designed to be eradicated.
I'm glad you brought that up, Jesse, because I always thought this, and it's evident. I believe a lot of religious people, and I'm not attacking religious people, but I believe a lot of religious people are used as pawns because they'll demonize something like hemp, and they'll get the religious people to come out against it in droves. Do you think religion is part of the problem that we're facing in this country?
Don't even get me started on religion. we're going to a topic there that, that I'm very outspoken. I'll just give you this, my belief on that. And this is the big picture. I do not believe man and religion can both survive.
I agree, yeah.
Let me explain. Because all religions preach an Armageddon. So therefore they believe we're destined because of this belief in God that someday Armageddon's going to happen and the world is going to be destroyed in a big fail swoop. Well, they believe it so much, they lead us to it, so that they can then say, see, I was right all along. And so it will be, if there is an Armageddon, this is my belief, if there is an Armageddon, it won't be done by a supreme being. It'll be done by man to himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to me, religions, look at every war is religious based.
Yeah.
Every one of them.
People don't get it. It happens over and over again, too. I think what we've been at war, the majority that we've been a country, haven't we?
I'm 67 years old now, and we have been at war literally all of my adult life, in my childhood life, basically, if you count the war on drugs, because that was a replacement war. That was a war that got stuck in there in the 80s because we didn't have any other wars on the horizon, so they had to create one. So they created the war on drugs and started using our military to fight the war on drugs in other countries and all that, flying around in helicopters and all the stuff that goes with it. When the reality of it all is, like in Vietnam, the CIA was running drugs right into the U.S.
Yeah.
They had to make money so they could do their operations and all that stuff. What was it? They called it the Golden Triangle or whatever it was over there in Southeast Asia. You know, and all that stuff that's all been hushed up and put under the rug and all that. You know, it's horrifying. You get me started on war. I'm so anti-war now. I mean, we were lied to in Vietnam completely. And I'll tell you something right now that really bothers me in many ways is our entire society is glorifying war on television and the way we are, making it seem like war is some honorable thing. And that when you go off and kill other human beings, that you're some sort of hero for doing that. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I look back at the Vietnam War today, and I feel shame over the fact that I involved myself in what was nothing but colonialism. And I despise colonialism today. You know, and that's all the Vietnam War was. It was a war of colonialism. And and I took part in it. And today, and I don't, you know, I did it, and I did it of my own free will. I wasn't even drafted. I volunteered. And so and people come up to me today, and, you know, they'll thank me for my service. And I'll tell you, quite honestly, it was way different back then. We didn't get thanked. We were spit on when we came home. We had the war blamed on us. And so many times I'll say to people when they thank me, I say, well, you're 45 years too late.
Yeah.
You know, because we didn't get thanked. In fact, most us Vietnam veterans, we didn't even admit we were for about 10 years. Because I remember there were signs on the lawns in San Diego, California, no dogs or sailors on the grass.
Boy, that's just disgusting.
No, I mean, you laugh about it and kind of chuckle, but it is rather pathetic. But again, I wish that we somehow, you're not a hero if you go to war. You really aren't. You're doing your job, and you're brave, and you're all those things. But I've always made the statement, what's more powerful, government or God? Well, clearly government is. Because every religion teaches you that thou shalt not kill, except they all have an exception. If you're killing on behest of government, it's okay.
Yeah, that's true.
That bothers me. So who's more powerful? Well, clearly governments are more powerful than God, because governments, you can kill on behest of the government, and you're elevated to hero status.
Oh, which is, how many confirmed kills you got?
Think about it a minute. Think about it. To tear away all this stuff, this bullshit you watch on television, and think about it a moment. That really, so if I kill on behalf of my government, I'm a hero. But yet every religion says thou shalt not kill. And there's not an asterisk there that says, well, except if the government asks you to. Just like the border right now. we're supposed to be a Christian nation, right? And all this stuff, 73% Christian, they want to declare us that and do all this. Down on the border of Mexico right now, my simple question would be this, and this is directed at all, especially at Mike Pence, the VP. I would say to him, gee, is that what Jesus would do?
Yeah.
What do you think Jesus would do down at the border? Do you think Jesus would turn those people away and send them back to Central America where they're likely to be killed in the hostile things going on down there that we created, I might add?
Separating children
back in
from
the 80s
families.
With arms for Contra and all that shit. You know, we create the stuff, just like the thing just like the current bombing in Sri Lanka. You know who ultimately deserves blame for that? Us. You know why?
Yeah, the rhetoric that's coming out of Orange Man's
mouth,
I would say.
No. Bush and Cheney, when they invaded Iraq, they had no plan of what they were going to do there, and that's when ISIS was created. ISIS was created because the Ba'ath Party got kicked out. They were the government. And all of the Saddam's military was let go. They didn't get paid no more. They all went up north and formed the resistance. They then grew into being ISIS. So ISIS was created by George Bush and Dick Cheney. And yet our media won't tell you that, will they?
No.
No, they won't.
They won't. We stir up,
you know, because
we
they don't go. Do you know what happened to me at the? I always tell this story, and you need to hear this. I don't know if you're aware what happened to me right when I came out of office of being governor. I came out of office. I was the hottest commodity out there. I was the voice of the independent. CNN, MSNBC, and Fox got in a bidding war for me. MSNBC won. I signed a 3-year contract with them. I was going to be their prime-time independent person. Right before the show's ready to go on, we get a phone call that goes like this. Is it true Governor Ventura doesn't support the invasion of Iraq? My subordinate, I wasn't there at the time, said, oh, no, he's vehemently opposed to it. He's a Vietnam veteran. He said Iraq is Vietnam all over again. It's wrong. It's wrong. They didn't have nothing to do with 9/11. Da, da, da. And I was right, of course. So anyway, second part of the call, does Connecticut know about this? That's the big headquarters, and my subordinate says, I don't know. Third part of the call, after a pause, is there any chance he changes mind? Subordinate, I don't think so. He's pretty well, when he sets his mind to something, you can't change him. And especially in war like this, he's got his background. He knows his opinion. Well, guess what happened? I wasn't allowed on the air. They pulled my show. At the same time, Phil Donahue had just come on MSNBC. He likewise was opposed to the Iraq war. He was their highest-rated show. They pulled him. So Donahue and I were not allowed on the air. My contract said 3 years I couldn't do any news shows or cable television. So in other words, I was handcuffed and tape put across my mouth for 3 years. From 03 to 06, the entire time of the Iraq war. And if you think back, did you hear anybody speaking out against invading Iraq of the media? No. Because
anyone
who did, anyone who would have, was taken off the air. So tell me who runs your mainstream media in America today.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. It's definitely... crazy.
Well, you know who I work for, don't you?
Governor, and then Phil Donahue off the air. I mean, it's nuts.
Well, you know who I work for now, don't you?
Who's that?
I work for RT America, Russian television.
Yeah, RT America, yep.
Yeah, they give me my free speech. Now, is that not an upside-down world? When the Russians allow me
to
talk about anything?
And you know what's crazy? We've had people like George Carlin, rest in peace, Two Live Crew, Ice-T, all these people fight for freedom of speech here, yet we don't have freedom of speech.
No, you don't. Especially in your TV and in your news organizations, they're all corporate-owned. They're all down to about 4 or 5 different corporations own them all, and they're all victim to advertising. You will never hear anything about Big Pharma negative, because they do about 70% of the advertising on the majority of television. Now think about that a moment. Big Pharma, they do ads. Drug prices are so high anyway, yet they do ads telling you to tell your doctor what you want.
Yeah.
Well, I got news for you. If you're telling the doctor what you want, the doctor ain't a doctor. The doctor's a dealer.
Because
the doctor should be telling you. So why do they need ads on TV? If the doctors know of these drugs and we need them and go to the doctor, well, the doctor's going to give them to us. Why do they need to be advertised on TV so much that it drives the prices through the roof? They should not allow drug ads on television.
No, they shouldn't. And
it's 70% of the revenue.
Yeah, and most of the crap that they advertise is very harmful to you. I mean, you listen to the side effects. It's like, I have a little bit of anxiety or depression. This is going to make me want to kill myself. It's crazy.
I listened to them, and by the time you're through hearing the side effects, you'd rather deal with what you got.
You're more depressed by the time you hear about the side effects.
Or let me do a cell job. Listen to all them side effects and then realize that it'll pop. You could probably cure it with cannabis.
Yeah. You know, what's crazy, Jesse, my father, he passed away last year. He had prostate cancer. He battled it for many, many years. And here in Illinois, you know, but for years they were strict on it. I remember asking the doctor when he was in palliative care, I was like, does he have to take these opiates? Can we give him some type of CBD or something? No, this is all we prescribe, just opiates. We don't deal with the CBDs. We don't deal with that. And I thought, you guys are in the back pockets of these pushers.
Worse than that, the CBDs have cured it before.
Yeah.
Tommy Chong had prostate cancer. He don't now.
Yeah. I remember
the guy who did the forward. The guy who did the forward for my book, Marijuana Manifesto, he had inoperable, adrenal cancer. They gave him a 4-year death sentence. He sent me a message last week. He's turning 70 this year. That was 25 years ago. And he had a 4-year death sentence from adrenal cancer. He's the one that legalized all the medical marijuana in California. He led the charge. And they raided his house like they did Tommy Chong. Did you ever read Tommy Chong's book?
I haven't. I've seen his documentary and a lot of different things about him.
You need to read his book. They put him in prison for selling a pipe.
Yeah.
He sold a pipe across state lines by mistake, and Tommy thinks they infiltrated his company because they had turned these people down a half a dozen times. Then all of a sudden one went out. He thinks somebody got into his company and sent it out there on purpose, that it was a setup. And they came out and they raided Tommy's house like a SWAT team with the helicopters and the guys in black with machine guns. And Tommy's inside, and he tells the story about when they come busting in. The guy looks at him and goes, okay, where's the pot? And Tommy looks at him and goes, well, anywhere. I'm Tommy Chong.
Come on.
What do you think? You're solving a big mystery here? That's like when they bust Willie Nelson. You know, periodically they'll bust poor Willie. You know, he'll be driving in his bus or whatever on tour, and periodically you'll get some cops that'll bust Willie for having it. I mean, what a joke. Come on, Willie Nelson, one of the greatest entertainers in the world. If he wants to smoke pot, who gives a crap?
Yeah. I mean, the guy's still touring. I mean, leave him the hell alone. They demonize this stuff, and then they for years, you point out in the foreword in Jen's book about how they legalized marijuana for medicinal in '96 in California. But they didn't have the hemp plant
You couldn't farm it or anything.
No.
And yet,
let me say, in World War II, it was called Hemp for Victory. They were growing it because it made rope, it made all this stuff for the United States Navy needed, and it's an unbelievable versatile plant that you can use that would really help the whole climate situation today, and that, to me, alone is enough to fully exploit hemp, cannabis, all of it to its extreme. That's what we need to be exploiting today. And do you know Willie Nelson runs all his buses on it?
No, I never knew that, but that makes sense.
It makes diesel fuel.
Yeah.
Well,
the reason they do that, they'll sign these laws, and then they'll still play the stall game because they got buddies that are in all these other industries. Like you once famously said, they should wear NASCAR suits so we know who owns them. And I think they stall it and oppose the hemp production because it shuts down other industries.
Well, it's competition.
Why not take it?
They tell you that capitalism is about competition, but in their belief, it's about eliminating the competition.
Yeah, I want to
see the more competition you have, the lower the prices will go. That's why up in Minnesota, it's so expensive to get the CBD straight with nothing else, because they haven't opened it up to where it's profitable enough. And I told you then you got this tax law and all that. So it costs me $600 a month that I can't write off to nothing. And if I lived in Colorado, it would be probably $50 a month.
Yeah.
Now, that's ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous whenever they pass any law where it's just legal in one state and then it's not legal in this state. I mean,
well,
it should be across
the
whole
board. No, I'm not so much opposed to that. I think if they would leave cannabis state by state, I'm good with that. That way you know which states it's okay in and which ones it's not. I'm fine with that, really, if it has to go that direction. In the perfect world, no, the feds would get out of it. Well, that's how you handle alcohol. The drinking age is determined state by state. It's not a universal drinking age. By the way, that's another thing I'd like to talk about in a moment. Have you seen this stuff where they're passing laws now that you can't buy tobacco till you're 21?
Yeah.
I'm so outraged over that, and I'm not for tobacco. I'm very much against it, but here's my argument. Wait a minute. You're telling me that you can't buy a cigarette, but you can go to Iraq and get shot and killed?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, why don't we try picking an age of adulthood? That's one of the biggest things I faced in the Vietnam, and the thing that bothers me today a great deal still, was the fact that I went in at 18 years old. I got trained till I was 19. I did my first 9-month deployment and came home at 20. Well, I was home for 5 days, and I went into my executive officer, and I said, I want to go right back to Southeast Asia now. And he said, you can't. You got to stay stateside at least 6 months before you can go back to the combat zone. And he goes, what's the problem? And I said, here's the problem, sir. I said, I can't go up on the street on Orange Avenue in Coronado and drink a beer. I said, I can't even vote for who sends me to Vietnam, because 18 voting didn't come in until 72. So I couldn't vote for who would send me there. I couldn't drink a beer, and yet I could go fight and die and kill for my country. Now, they weren't granting me the privileges of being an adult, so clearly I was still a child. Isn't that a horrible form of child abuse, sending children to war?
Absolutely. The worst.
And they still do it today. They still do it today with this law. If they're telling you you can't buy a cigarette till you're 21, but you can go die in Iraq at 18? What kind of nonsense is that?
No.
It's like the NBA. When the NBA now you got to go to 1 year of college. You know, LeBron and Kevin Garnett and Kobe, they didn't need college. They go right to the pros. What do they need college for? Well, now you got to go to 1 year of college. And like Jermaine O'Neal said, oh, so in other words, I can go die in Iraq, but I can't play basketball.
That's how you know you're not fully free, because you have these puppet masters pulling the strings of what we can and can't do, what we can and can't take for our medical illnesses. And it's getting to the point where, you know, we need some type of change. But like you said, there's a two-party dictatorship, and it doesn't look like it's going away anytime soon. What would it
well,
take
the only
to
way
shake
it could happen,
things up?
The only way it could happen is if I run.
That's what I told my dad. You know, me and my dad.
No, I mean the Green Party's approached me. The Green Party's approached me, and if I jump into the race, I'll get enough publicity, and I think I got a good way to get in the debates. And if I get into the debates, then get ready, because that's how I won Minnesota. The minute they let me in the debates, the race was over. And I think I could do the same thing nationally.
If they don't do what they did to Rand Paul, if they give you the time to speak on stage against these guys, oh, yeah, you would decimate them, definitely.
Well, there's a way to do it, and you can't join. See, the problem with Rand Paul was he tried to do it within one of the parties. You can't do it from within the party. You can't do it from – you got to be outside the gang.
Because I think
if you're inside the gang – I mean, Trump got elected because he joined the Republican gang, and he took it over. He beat the Bush dynasty. Then he beat the Clinton dynasty one at a time, which was a smart move. I can't condemn him for it. It worked. And so you can't say it was bad, because it did work. But in my case, I'd be taking both of them on, the Repubs and the Dems. And I have to beat them by being the centrist, the common sense, which is now radical. Always remember, I heard a great quote in Mexico from my friend Nadine. She said to me, Governor, you need to remember one thing today. And I said, what's that, Nadine? She said, common sense is no longer common.
Yeah.
And I started laughing. I said, Nadine, you're exactly correct. Common sense is no longer common. It's a radical position now.
Oh.
But anyway, you know, the big key would be to get into the debates. But I would give the people, if we want to break free of this, then the people have to be bold, and the people have to have the courage to elect someone to a big position like Minnesota did me, to elect someone who is not from these two political parties. Because that sends a huge message. And then you know what they'll see down the road? They'll see these two parties get together and jump into bed together to oppose that other person. Because that's what happened in Minnesota my last year. The Dems and Repubs totally got into bed together to oppose me.
See, that's
what exposes them then for the frauds that they are.
Yeah, because behind the scenes, they're all going.
Do you know how I got exposed to them? Very early, when I ran for mayor of Brooklyn Park, Minnesota, way back in 1990. It was a nonpartisan election, so you didn't have to be a part of a party. And the Democrat and Republican parties got together, and they co-signed a letter calling me the most dangerous man in the city and supporting the 25-year incumbent mayor. Well, I ended up winning 67% to 33%, and I won every district, right? And here's when it was shown to me. Within 3 weeks, both of the two parties came courting me independently to join them. After just 3 weeks earlier, they called me the most dangerous man in the city and were joining forces to make sure I lost. As soon as I won, they then wanted me. And that's what showed me the fraud that these two political parties are. They stand for nothing. All they care is that you can win, and if you win, then you have to get in their lockstep, and they will tell you what you stand for.
Mm.
So the people need to have the courage in this country to elect someone who is not from these two parties. You're not going to get change electing Trump or somebody else with these two parties. It's not going to happen because you're going to see they're both in bed on the Department of Defense. They all want to go to war. That they're in lockstep on. Nobody bothers anybody about those because nobody wants to be called unpatriotic. Well, I'll come right out of the get-go and say I'm going to cut the defense budget.
Yeah.
Because it's I follow the teachings of Major General Smedley Butler, and I won't go into him today, but Major General Butler won 2 Congressional Medals of Honor. So I dare someone to question his opinion on war.
Yeah. Yeah.
You ever read him?
That's it.
He wrote a famous book.
I heard that he went to war and he was against it after he got back.
He won 2 Congressional Medals of Honor, and then he wrote the book War is a Racket.
And
he explains to you very quickly.
Is.
He's a Marine, so he gets right to the point. He explains to you very quickly. It's a very thin book that war is a racket, that wars are fought because there's war profiteers who make money. And that's the only reason they're fought. They're not fought for the reasons they tell us. They're fought for profit. All of them. Because Smedley Butler served before World War I.
And that's why they're still going. And they're gonna
Yet his
going.
Book is so timely today.
I know you're a busy man, Jesse. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
I appreciate it. I like doing podcasts because you can really get into talking about things, and it really allows me to explain myself, and I appreciate you for allowing me to do that.
Oh, anytime, man. I'd love to do it again in the future if possible. And
You do. Now, you know that there wouldn't be hip-hop music without Muhammad Ali.
He's the first, if I'm not mistaken.
Exactly. He was the first person that took rhyming and put it to rhythm.
Yeah, he is.
Oh, yeah. No, they people need to understand that hip-hop music owes itself to Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Because
he
was doing it back in the early 60s. You want to hear a little?
Yeah, give me a taste.
All right. This is the legend of Cassius Clay, the most beautiful fighter in the world today. He talks a great deal and brags indeedy of a muscular punch that's incredibly speedy. The fistic world was dull and weary. With a champ like Liston, things had to be dreary. Then someone with color, someone with dash, brought fight fans a-running with cash. This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance. This kid's got a left, this kid's got a right. If he hits you once, you're asleep for the night. And if you lie on the floor while the ref counts 10, you pray that you won't have to fight me again. For I am the man this story's about. I'll be champ of the world, there isn't a doubt. Here I predict Mr. Liston's dismemberment. I'll hit him so hard, he'll wonder where October and November went. Here I predict, and I know the score. I'll be champ of the world. In 64.
I am the greatest.
I do that right off the top of my head.
You must have listened to that record a lot. I mean, that's...
I listened to that record. You could tell the influence that Muhammad Ali had on Jesse Ventura.
Oh, man.
He's my hero.
What an amazing... Yeah, what an amazing... Not only athlete, but person. You know, he just helped so many people throughout the world. And,
and he stood for what he stood for. He gave up the greatest title in the world. He was the world heavyweight champion, and they wanted him to go to war, and he refused. And they took his title from him in his prime, and they took his way to make money, and he was willing to go to prison. And you're talking to a Vietnam veteran here who looks at him with admiration because he stood up for what he believed in. He was willing to go to prison over it. He didn't have a doctor write a false report that he had bone spurs on his feet and commit a felony to get out of it. He was willing to go to jail for what he believed in. You know that person I'm talking about, the other one?
Yes.
Our current president. who to me committed a felony because he lied about having bones. Because I want to see him. Bone spurs don't go away. I want to see his bone spurs that kept him out of the Vietnam War. Because if Donald Trump would have gone, we might have won. Listen to him. He tells you he's the greatest at everything. Well, then why did he deny us victory over there? Why didn't he join us? Instead, he ran and hid with Dick Cheney.
Yeah, he
see
wants
how
to hide everything.
See how Jesse Ventura could
be
a huge problem?
X-rays of those bone spurs. If they
yeah, I want to see them. I want to see the bone spurs.
Hide,
just like
show
he, well, just like he wanted to see Obama's birth certificate.
Yeah.
I want to see the bone spurs. Okay, anyway, I got to run. Thanks a lot. I'll be controversial as hell after this interview. Anyway.
Hey, I much respect to you, Jesse. Thank you so much. Before